Melbourne, world's most livable city. Yep. Sorry, Adelaide, but there it is. Melbourne, it has character and idiosyncratic charm. 30 years ago, it might have been a struggle to imagine the urbane, bustling, 24/7 heart of the southern capital. 30 years ago, it turned its back on the river that runs through it. 30 years ago, it was a residential no-go zone. 30 years ago, it was a shadow of the inner city it has become. Now, this transformation was no accident. A new book charts the story of Melbourne's transformation and growth. Urban Choreography, Central Melbourne, 1985 to now. It's edited by Kim Dovey, Rob Adams and Ronald Jones, and Kim Dovey joins us. He's Professor of Architecture and Urban Design at the University of Melbourne. Kim, welcome.
Thank you.
That's a wonderful phrase, urban choreography. It's very evocative.
Yes, it is. It's meant to mean that trying to coordinate a very large number of different factors at the same time into something that is aesthetically pleasing, but engaging and even edgy in its own way, sort of not without, you know, distortions and mistakes and little things that are going on. So not a kind of micromanagement, but trying to understand the city as a multiplicity of things coming together and incrementally changing over a long period of time.
Now, the thing about this is that Melbourne's path through this choreography is a thing which perhaps stands as a model for other places. This has been a tremendous success.
Well, it's not a success in every way, but it has been a success in global terms. If you look globally at the kind of cities that had the kind of urbanity that Melbourne had 30 years ago, many of them haven't changed as much in this way, or haven't changed at all, or in some cases have deteriorated. Central Melbourne stands out, and I really mean the central grid and the inner city. Mm. I mean, there's some parts of central Melbourne that are not so successful, parts of South Bank, where we are now, and the Docklands are not as successful as other parts of central Melbourne. But overall, the story is a good news story. And as you say, it's not an accident. There's been a lot of changes that have been made over a long period of time that have led to that. Not the big splashy projects. There have been a few of those. Some of them have worked, some of them haven't. But really, the thing that has worked most has been this long series of incremental changes over time.
Take us back to 1985. I mean, paint a picture of the city as it was then.
It was a relatively dull place in many ways that kind of closed on evenings and weekends. It was a place where hardly anybody lived in the central city grid. People lived, sure, in the ring of inner city suburbs around Melbourne, but hardly anyone lived in the central city, and that's been one of the big success stories. There was a sense of the laneways were mostly derelict. There were sort of startups and a few of the sort of young creative firms. Indeed, The first female Lord Mayor, Lecky Ord, was an architect who had her office in one of the lanes, and she brought a passion to try and realise the potential of laneways from that period onwards. But this is not a story of heroes, really, but a story of collaborations across a lot of people and a lot of projects.
It's a story of a sort of interesting confluence of people in a time and place, isn't it, that sort of led to a fairly organic process in a way. I mean, your co-editor, Rob Adams, now he has a fundamental role in what happens.
Rob has played a key role and has been someone who understands what makes cities tick and has had a great deal of patience and a great deal of professional expertise in managing this process through many periods of turmoil and with different political regimes and so on. So,
what's been his role, his formal role?
Well, he's been effectively head of urban design through all of that period at the City of Melbourne.
It's such an interesting thing because, as you say, we've had this I was going to say rejuvenation, but that's the wrong word, this sort of flourishing of the core of the City of Melbourne. And yet, I mean, there's much discussion about this. The theory was that to have that happen in the centre of our cities would be an enlivening thing for the city broadly. I wonder if that's been achieved. I mean, because we often now in our big urban areas have cities broadly of many parts, and inner Melbourne is a very different thing to outer northern Melbourne. Inner Sydney is a different thing to outer western Sydney.
That's right. And this book is really only about central Melbourne. There is a larger story to be told about, you know, larger Melbourne, and so much of the rest of the Melbourne is, of course, suburbs.
Mm.
And that's the key challenge. The last chapter of this book is called Future Melbourne, with a question mark. I mean, where are we going? So there's a fair bit of speculation there about what the next steps are. And in many ways, I think it is spreading the lessons that have been learned from central Melbourne, the things we know about what makes cities tick, and spreading those things to the suburbs, where, you know, the challenges are different, but the underlying principles are often not much different. So in many ways, that vision, if you want to call it that, is one of particularly spreading some of the intensity of central Melbourne out along the transit lines and along the train stations and so on, and trying to bring some of that urbanity to the suburbs without destroying the values of the suburbs that so many Melburnians really value.
Is there a risk that the things that make inner urban areas wonderful become, you know, the work of a self-serving group of people who inhabit that space, who enjoy that space, who create that space?
Oh, yeah.
In a way that they enjoy.
Well, it's certainly seen that way. And the gentrification of the inner city certainly leads to a displacement of lower-income people who are then left in highly car-dependent locations out on the urban fringe. So that has been the story of larger Melbourne. It's not a pleasant story. That's a story, I think, for another book. But it that certainly has been the story. And how we address that challenge is the biggest challenge for the future. Especially,
yes.
Trying to design a city that is less car dependent than the one we have now. So one of the real success stories in central Melbourne has been making central Melbourne less car dependent, and that's been again an incremental story of taking back, you know, one square metre of car space, one car parking lot at a time, such that it becomes pretty silly now for most people to drive to central Melbourne. Now we can spread some of that to the suburbs as well.
It's an interesting thing because so much in so much in public life is dependent on political will, which is a changeable feast. And yet the growth of this city is a thing which has managed to maintain a reasonable curve despite political fluctuations.
Yeah, it's one of the big tasks, I think, of urban design. And I think it's a tribute to Rob and others at the City of Melbourne that they've been able to do that. And indeed, in many cases, to bring new political leadership on board after the event. So, for instance, some Lord Mayors have actually come in vowing to reopen Swanston Street to traffic. And, you know, they've been turned around and become champions for the kind of directions that have been made. And I think that's a piece of the puzzle here is in managing to get some political continuity to this and to bring politicians on board to the idea that although these changes are slow and they're not particularly splashy, it's not a project that you can win the next election on, that over time it's something that we can all be proud of and that indeed politicians can be proud of if they show leadership during that period.
Yeah, commitments required a pretty long term, which is an interesting thing for politicians to grapple with. Yeah. Are there lessons in what Melbourne has done since 1985 that other Australian cities would do well to heed?
I think there are. Indeed, it's one of my key interests in this book is actually to try and extract the lessons that might be more broadly useful. I mean, I would, in a sense, put them, there's a little triangle that I call the urban DMA, the density mix access network. If you get the access networks right, the public transport and the walkable networks of the central city, like the laneways and so on, are all part of that network. If you get that right, if you get the density right, and density is one of those double-edged swords where, you know, density is great because it brings intensity to the city, and density is also dangerous because density can kill the very urbanity that it brings. So getting that right, and we really haven't got that right in many ways. And the other part of that little triangle is the mix. So you have to have a mix of different kinds of functions. You've got to have residential and retail and commercial. You've got to have forms of production and workshops and so on, entertainment and all of the other community uses. You've got to have them all everywhere. So getting that mix, that's been one of the real success stories, is making central Melbourne more mixed. And if you can get the mix, the density and the access all right, then I think that that's the lesson that I would say can be applied in any city, because that's what makes good cities tick.
And it, I mean, it's interesting that in this country we're looking at, you know, very young urban areas. I mean, other places have had the benefit of millennia to let the things that you've just described slowly occur through almost natural processes. And yet here we are creating it in very short space of time.
Well, we didn't create it from nothing. I mean, we were lucky in many ways. I mean, one of the lucky things about Melbourne is that this grid was laid down that was actually not all that well geared to the market at the time. The lots were too big, the blocks were too big. And over time, processes of subdivision and speculation, of course, broke those down and the laneways appeared. So we've, in a sense, got two networks, one on top of the other, the formal one, the grid, and then the informal laneways that emerged over time. And it's the juxtaposition between them, the way in which they come together in a kind of synergy that I think helps to give central Melbourne that interest and that buzz. So we haven't invented it from nothing. But as you say, Melbourne's a new world city. It's not an old world city. We often look at the really older cities and we say they've got a certain magic that must have emerged somehow naturally. But I wouldn't use the word natural because there's nothing natural about thousands of people getting together and putting their best ideas together over a millennium to produce a great city. And a lot of those cities have evolved in that incremental way over a long period of time, trying different things and are keeping the ones that work and getting rid of the ones that don't and so on. Melbourne's no exception to that. And sure, we've done it in a shorter period of time, but it's not finished yet. And we face some serious challenges, particularly the ones that you talked about with regard to the larger suburban areas, many of which are disadvantaged, but also in relation to managing density. We're approving many projects at the moment that are damaging the city due to overdevelopment, in my view.
Kim, we look forward in 30 years' time to the next volume and see how that works out.
I think that would be very interesting to look back in another 30 years here.
Kim Dovey, he's Professor of Architecture and Urban Design at the University of Melbourne and co-editor of Urban Choreography, Central Melbourne 1985-1985 to an uncertain future. This is Blueprint here on RN.